trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're going to get into some college football stuff. The AP poll came out yesterday. Lots of movement. Lots of teams going up, lots of teams going down. We'll talk about that, the thoughts on that movement this early in the season. What is your top 10? Give us what you think the top 10 should be right now. 225-9698 is that text line or the phone line. We'll do that as well. Also, Mike Gundy has some interesting comments about playoff expansion, some of which I might agree with, some of which I don't necessarily think he's on the right track. So we can get into all of that. Give you an update on the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em through 1 week. What are the standings looking like? Also, the AP poll in high school football is out. We'll talk about that. District races heating up on the fast pitch diamond. The Elkettes suffered a tough one yesterday that now makes it blatantly obvious, basically, what has to happen in order to win a district title. So we'll talk about all that. Also, in 2A1, it's bunched up as well with Merritt and Minko, Hobart and Mangum vying for different positions going into the fast pitch playoff. So we'll talk about all of that. Whatever else is on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. That is the phone or the text line. That's 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The Paragon app has it all. Three radio stations. It's got the Penny News, a brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight. Right there at thepennynews.com. Print editions will be filtering out this afternoon. By tomorrow at this time, you can go pick up a free copy of the brand new Penny News wherever your favorite local newsstand is. Big Elk TV and Paragon TV back online with two games this week as the Elks will be hosting Canadian Texas on Big Elk TV. And then it is Hollis and Velma Alma on Paragon TV. Merritt's got the week off before finishing out their non-district schedule next week. So a couple of games there. Also, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed one of the shows entirely and you want to go back and check out what we had to say, easy to do, KADSAM.com, or you can find that on iTunes. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
I am wonderful. I have got a question. Why is it that some nights you just sleep like the greatest sleep of all time? Last night was one of those nights for me. I mean,
oh good.
There's times where you kind of toss and turn or maybe get thirsty in the middle of the night or have to go to the restroom in the middle of the night.
Sure.
Last night, I think I woke up in the exact same position that I fell asleep. And it was like I was asleep for 30 minutes. I wonder why that is. Why does that happen some nights and not others? Is it just a function of being tired? Is it you're just relaxed? What do you think?
Something like that, I guess, because you're just really, really tired or really, really, really comfortable. You know, you sleep the best in your own bed, in your own house. I don't know. It's a lot of that, I think, involved.
I mean, a lot of times
storms, kid didn't wake you up.
Yeah.
Dogs didn't start barking in the middle of the night, nothing like that. Yeah, it was just the perfect scenario for you. I've done that. I've done it where I've gone to sleep, and then boom, I wake up and I look and you know my alarm's going off. I'm like, wow, I didn't move. But then you're a little disappointed, like, dang, that was quick.
I mean, you almost
but you're rested. You know, you're well rested. But yeah,
but you think to yourself, gosh, if I'd have known I was going to sleep that well, I'd have went to sleep at like 6 o'clock.
I know, right?
You got four more hours of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it never works that way.
There's something pleasing about waking up and like, oh, really? It's already time to wake up. And then you look at the clock and it's like 1:30.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. I got a lot more time. There's something pleasing about that. But I like that scenario. I like your scenario better. When you get that full rest. So you feel good, right?
Oh,
you
know, absolutely.
There's no disappointment waking
no,
up.
No, heck no.
All right.
But you just...
How come it can't be like that all the time?
Or how come it can't be like I can't know ahead of time it's going to happen? Because like I said, then as soon as I got done mowing the yard last night, eat a little supper, about 8:15, I'd have been hitting the sack if I'd have known I was going to sleep awesome. I might as well get another couple hours in there. And we had one text that said Ambien. That's the answer to the problem.
Oh, wow. No. No.
I don't know.
I don't do that it anymore. It's just such a
I don't know for
circus
me.
In my house getting kids to bed. Normal time, they fight you and fight you and fight you. I'm thirsty.
It was weird because that may have been part of it. Because we were sitting there, we were watching television, and it got to be like a little past 9:30, and there wasn't a lot of talk. A lot of times there's visiting going on, and everybody was just kind of quiet.
Yeah.
And then the show ended, and in most cases, well, I'd be like, oh, no, it's not time for bed. Let's watch another one, or whatever show we're watching. Let's watch another episode. And I said, well, I guess it's time for bed. He goes, good night, Aaron. I'll see you in the morning. So maybe everybody was ready for a night of sleep like that. But for me, I don't – I mean, there's definitely some tiredness in play. But a lot of times when I know I'm, like, really tired – it's almost like I'm too tired to go to sleep. Does that make sense? Like I'm restless. I can't get my body settled because it is so tired. So maybe that was part of it, but I think for some reason, just relaxed and
just relaxed. Maybe the weekend, the long weekend take a lot out of you, and you didn't feel like you got enough sleep on Monday night, and so Tuesday you go back to work, go back to your routine. And then suddenly, boom, you got – was that maybe a part of it? I know it was for my kids.
Very, very well could have been.
They came home from school, and they were exhausted from what I was told.
Could have been.
Yeah, I wonder if that's part of it.
Your mind settles. Right. Your body settles.
Back in that routine,
You just get to sleep. So that was – so I'm doing great today. Very, very good. What do you want to talk about first in the high school? You want to talk about the AP poll? You have that pulled up?
I can. I glanced at her a little earlier this morning. We can go there.
Or the district races in fast pitch softball.
Either one's a good topic.
Okay, so while you're pulling that up, we'll talk about the softball.
Okay.
Last night, interesting results in 4A1 as Weatherford knocked off Tuttle. 4-3, and the Elkettes were shut out by Cash 3-0. So when the dust settled after yesterday's play, you look at the standings. Weatherford is all alone at the top at 5-1. The Elkettes and Tuttle are tied for essentially second. Nobody's played the same amount of games, but in the loss column, both Tuttle and Elk City with 2 losses. Then Cash is 4th with 3 losses. And then, of course, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that 5th spot matters now because that will be the team that gets in a play-in series to try to make it into the bracket. Clinton has 2 wins, Woodward 1 win. Woodward's only played 5 of their 12 district games so far. Clinton's played 7. And those two teams have 1 more game left. That could be the difference because the other games are with the better teams in the district, if that makes sense. Unless they can pull off an upset over one of the teams in the race for the top, those two teams play each other, and that could be the difference in who's 5th and who's 6th. But when you look at the schedules, today is essentially a must-win, I think, for the Elkettes in order to be able to claim a district title. A loss today against Tuttle in that makeup from the rainout, a week ago or what have you. A loss here puts you at 3 losses. If you look at Weatherford's schedule, Weatherford's 5-1. They got 2 with Woodward, which you would pretty well throw in the win column. 1 with Clinton, which, same thing. And 1 with Anadarko, which would be the same thing. So, at that point, if Elk City can't win today, they would have to beat Weatherford themselves and then hope that Cash beats Weatherford to give them three losses. Of course, a win today would give Tuttle three losses, and then, you know, Cash would need to lose one of their remaining games. So, you know, a win here, you're still at two. You're still two at the loss column. If you can, then it's in your hands only. You can beat Weatherford, and then it probably goes down to the district points, since those two teams will have split, and Elk City's way out on top as far as that goes, at least right now. So very interesting today in that kind of makeup game from last week with the rain because of what happened yesterday and Cash beating Elk City and Weatherford knocking off Tuttle.
Yeah, I forgot that was scheduled for today. So quick turnaround for the Elkettes. Makes you wonder if they were kind of looking ahead. Yeah, you hope not, but with that way things shook out against Cash, looking at Cash's record, I mean, yeah, above 500, but sprinkled with a lot of losses and close wins too. They're kind of a up and down team, so we'll see. They got to regroup and get at it, because that is almost, like you said, a must win tonight to stay in that conversation of a district title.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. And so we'll see what happens tonight with that game, and then how that sets up later down the line. Because you know, you look at Tuttle's schedule. They got one with Elk, one with Cash, and then two with Woodward. The Elkettes have Tuttle and Weatherford left, and then Cash has Tuttle and Weatherford left. You know, so it's not like outside of Weatherford, they're down to just – oh, no, they've still got Elk City and Cash also. So of the top four that are clearly ahead of everybody else in the standings, they each play the other one with two games. So nobody's kind of ran the gauntlet yet, and it's just – is trying to finish out the season. Everybody's still got to kind of play everybody, or at least somebody that's at the top of those standings. So that's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. It's going to make a huge difference come regional seeding time and where you got to go and who you got to play. In 2A1, similar situation going on. Minko and Merritt both undefeated in the district so far. Minko's played three more games than the Oilerettes have. But you look at the Oilerettes schedule, it's all right there in front of them. Frederick and Cordell haven't won a game yet in district. Merritt's got two games apiece with those two teams. So that seems like an advantage, right? Difference is they still got Minko and they still got Hobart. So it goes Minko, Merritt, Hobart, Mangum, top four. Merritt still plays Hobart and Minko in doubleheaders. So it's right there. Go win the games. You'll be the district champ. No questions asked. You start kind of
talk about a backloaded schedule.
Yeah, I wonder how much that was set that way, or if it just missing some, because Merritt's only played six games. Everybody else is minimum of 10.
Yeah.
So you wonder with some rainouts if some of that didn't get moved around to where it looks the way it does now,
right?
And it wasn't that way originally. But the Oilerettes have it right there, right in front of them, with what the schedule has left. Also down there at that 5-6. Sayre has ran through all the games except for two, and they still have to play Walters twice. Well, Sayre's 4-8, Walters is 3-7, so just a game separates those two. They play each other twice. And then when you look at what else Walters has, they've got Frederick and also Minko. You'd kind of put the Frederick game in the win column, the Minko game in the loss column. So that means the Sayre Lady Eagles, if they can just split the two Walters games, that would give them enough to be able to be solidly in that fifth spot.
Yeah. Very doable. Very doable.
I didn't have time to tell you the difference. I'm going to do that here at some point of, okay, if you win this game, you get to stay here. If you lose this game, now you got to go play here. It's hard to do with everybody so close because not quite that far, but I mean, you know, you could, one loss can be the difference between winning the district and being fourth because of how bunched up everything is and how similar the teams all are. And so Jeremy just said, not much different than the top four.
Right.
They all seem pretty good. And who's on their game a certain night makes a big difference and how this thing's going to shake out. So good stuff there in both 4A1 and 2A1 as those district title races heat up with just a handful of games left in both before we get to the playoffs mid to late month here in September. You got the AP poll pulled up in the high school football ranks?
Yeah, we'll start in 4A. Tuttle number one, Poto two. I mean, that's razor thin in my opinion. In Cushing three, all three of those are arguably the best team in 4A. Wagner suffered their first loss, only loss. Sorry, I forgot that they opened week one. They're four, Hilldale five, Bethany six, tied with Clinton at six, Broken Bow eight, and tied at nine is Elk City and Blanchard. And receiving votes, Ada, Newcastle, and Ulaga. So Elk City doesn't move up. They don't move down. They just stay right there at nine. I'll argue they should be the only nine since they're 2-0. It looked good doing it. So, not really shocking to me. Clinton losing, dropping where they did. A lot of respect for Bethany. I think that's a team I'm kind of keeping my eye on. Not sure what to make of Hilldale because they're way over there. Not sure about them. Let's go down to where do I want to go, Aaron? I think Class A is what's kind of interesting. Ringling 1, Gore 2, a lot of people's favorite out here. Fairview is 3, Tonkawa 4. Skipping on down, my favorite, Cashin 7. Ugh, looks bad. Hinton 8. Class B, Laverne 1, Shattuck 2, Sealing 3. By the way, Sealing plays Laverne this week, is that right?
I believe that's correct.
That's going to be it. I'm in a pick'em group. I have no idea how to pick that.
I think I'd look for a different game.
Yeah, I had the option of not picking it, so I didn't. Wasn't going to give me points either way. But that'd be a fun one to watch. Check out. Class C, Mountain View is in the top five after a dominating win to open the season. There you are, 1-0. And they were right there last year, so maybe they're still...
They played for the state title.
Yeah, maybe they're still contenders there. Timberlake leads that class at number one. Tipton 2, Winoka 3, Mod 4, of course Mountain View 5. Go up to 6A. Big game this week, Jinx and Union. Bixby still number one in 6A Division 1. Jinx 2, Union 3. I picked Union. 6A Division 2, Stillwater 1. Not much shocker there. 5A, McAllister 1, Del City 2. Where's Carl Albert, you may ask? They're tied for 7th with Lawton Mack. And there's Grove at 10.
Yeah, Del City went to Booker T and won, which is a big boost to them getting up to number two. Where's Coweta?
Coweta's three. They did receive a first-place vote.
I mean, I think you'd have to scour all the schedules of all the teams in Oklahoma high school football. I get it. But it'd be hard to find two better wins than what Coweta's put on the board so
far. Yeah, I agree. You games know, to look at this week, Noble and Tuttle. Noble's 9 and 5A, Tuttle number 1 and 4A. Not sure where that's at. I think it's at Noble.
No.
Is it at Tuttle?
Tuttle, yeah. Okay. That one, Cushing goes to Perkins, which is a top 5 matchup between 4A and a 3A. What do they have 3A for Perkins?
3A Perkins is at 6.
6, so the Oklahoman had them 4. So that's still right there close.
Red Tornado's next opponent, Harris Hall, number 2.
Number 2,
does not get any easier for Clinton.
Here's a game to look forward to. Not this week, but next week. And we might find out just how good one of our Paragon teams is before they get into the to B1. Hollis goes to Mountain View Godibo.
No, that could be fun.
Next week. That could be a good one.
That could be a fun one.
Yeah, that could be a very good game. Obviously, the Elks with Canadian. Started watching a little bit of that. It's going to be by far the biggest challenge that Elk City has faced. From what I have seen just in the small work I've done, if Elk City can run the ball against Canadian, they're going to be able to run the ball against a lot of people because no one, starting with Seminole and then in the Bushland-Texas game, even though Canadian got beat by Bushland, Bushland didn't run it at all.
Couldn't or wouldn't?
Couldn't. Couldn't run it. And then finally gave up and started throwing it, and that's when they were helped by some turnovers. I mean, Canadian fumbled or snapped it over the punter's head on the first possession, down to the one. They threw a 3-yard pick six. It was 21-0 before you can blink, and it was all off of mistakes. And then after that, it was a pretty even game from there on out. But yeah, that the defensive front, man, it just and that as the game went along, you know, give credit to Bushland for kind of running a little play action and then making the Wildcats defense pay for selling out to stop the run. That leads a huge question in everybody around here's mind. Can the Elks take advantage of that, or will they? Or can they block it up and run? It's going to be really fascinating to see. This game, just what I'm watching, first to 14 might be your winner.
Wow. For those wondering, they play in 3A Division II in the state of Texas, and I've seen them after the Bushland game as high as 4 in that division, ranked as
yeah,
high
right.
as 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bushland was...
So they're still a top 5 team out of Texas coming to town on Friday.
Yeah, Bushland was 3A Division I. They were picked to win their district out there. And so it's not rankings for that division. I haven't looked for them, quite frankly.
I just found that Dave Campbell's thing. Which is pretty respectable, that Dave Campbell's Texas.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
If you want Texas football, that's where you go.
That's where you go, yeah.
No doubt. All right.
Well, like I said yesterday, I'm really excited about Friday night. Really excited.
It's going to be a lot different test.
Yep.
Not for the Big Elks, for sure. And it's homecoming. About to have a heck of a crowd.
That's right.
By the way, note on Friday night I just received. It is homecoming night in Elk City. Homecoming will start at 6:30. So homecoming will be prior to the game. So 6:30 for homecoming. Tonight or Friday night for the Elk City game.
Kickoff at 7. Very good.
Yep. So 6:30 for homecoming. Everybody get out and see the festivities. Be there a little bit early than normal. All right. AP poll came out in college football after kind of a wild week one in some ways. Lots of movement, lots of big moves. Up the poll, down the poll. Just kind of give me your thoughts on what you saw from the AP poll in college football.
Not a lot of surprise based on the outcome, win or loss. Maybe a little shocked that Michigan got a lot of love to put them in the top 4. Maybe a little shocked that Clemson didn't fall a little more. But other than that, I mean, I wasn't too shocked with at least how the top 10 looked. And the love for USC has got to stop, but I get it. I think it was Jim yesterday said that, you know, that's just how it's going to be. They're large market. Everybody wins. Everybody's making money if USC is winning a lot of games. And they're going to be the media darling. And just get used to that. So I guess I'm saying I'm not shocked they were vaulted up to the top 10. But again, not too shocked with the results, with how it looked. How about you?
I thought Utah got the shaft a little bit, falling 6 spots. You know, if it's not their fault that you didn't have Florida ranked AP. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so do they get nicked because it's an unranked team? Well, now it's not. Now it's number 12. And as soon as we do our top 10, it's going to be a lot. I mean, I've got them even way higher than that.
Florida?
Yes, just because.
I considered it.
Well, here's my thing. This early in the season,
wins matter.
You're either going off of what you thought going out of what happened.
Yeah.
And to me, what's happened is way more important. It'll even out, but that the first of the
And
the
who
first
it happened season, against, too,
that,
I think
that's
matters.
It. Who played somebody?
Yeah.
You know, there's some teams this week that, in my mind, are going to have to have a chance to move way up in these polls because they're actually beating people.
Right.
For me, I think, and it's not because they're defending champ. I know you like that theory of, hey, they're number one until they get beat if they're the defending champ. I don't really subscribe to that. But what Georgia did to Oregon, nobody did anything that impressive. They were by far the most impressive team against a good, you know what I'm saying, against mm-hmm. a good opponent. So to me, Georgia has to be number one.
And I agree.
Right now.
I agree. Because I'll stick with it because they are the defending champs, but they look like they held up that crown pretty high above their heads against Oregon.
I really don't care about what happened last year, honestly. It's just what happened this year.
Yeah, and there's talks they could be better than last year, and man, it just they look so dominant against a team that's supposed to be competing for the Pac-12.
You know, they were
so damning to the Pac-12.
They were kind of the, like, you know, if the rich man's OSU as far as seemed to have a bunch of losses on defense, but a lot of the offense back. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
I mean, they had five guys drafted in the first round off of that defense a year ago, which was historically good. And then they go out and give up three to Oregon. And Stetson Bennett, all of a sudden, people are actually talking about him as a Heisman Trophy-type candidate, which, by the way, warranted after game one and what he did last year. Listen, that Georgia team, whew, so give me them at number one. Some other things. I was surprised a little bit, but happy to see how far Florida jumped. They either had the best or the second best win, depending on how you view Notre Dame and Ohio State. One of the two. And so it feels like as time has gone on, people are more willing to make those wild jumps instead of, you know, a lot of years they'd be like 21. Oh, they weren't ranked. Now let's rank them. Well, right there at the bottom of the top 20. Nah, not quite. I give them 21. Now all the way up to 12. And with a chance to really jump again with Big Blue coming to town in the Swamp this week. And another thing I was happy to see. Teams that even though they won, struggled and probably should have lost dropping, i.e. North Carolina State. North Carolina State should have dropped like they lost that game.
Right.
Because they should have lost that game to East Carolina. So they went from 13 to 18. That is reacting to what happened on the field mm-hmm. and not necessarily what you thought preseason.
Right.
So those things, I don't mind those wild swings up and down the pole early on. USC jumping four spots or beating Rice is a joke. But like you said, that's what's going to happen. Wait till they beat a team in the Pac-12 with Stanford this week. They'll be in the top five.
Yeah.
But all in all, give me Georgia first. I know we're going to go through our top ten here in just a second. But that's the one thing that, you know, and they're still not even close. When you look at first place votes, Bama with 44, Georgia with 17. You know, that's a huge discrepancy still between those two teams when Georgia really did something on the field. Bama was awesome, don't get me wrong. And they'll have they'll play – a little bit better team this week, but you know what Georgia did to Oregon, who fell completely out of the poll.
What a tumble!
From 11 to nothing.
What a tumble!
So that's interesting.
What a tumble!
All right, what do you got? Top 10. You want to start at number 10, or you want to start at number one?
No, I think you've already revealed both of our number ones. One.
I'm sure.
So let's go ahead and start at the top.
All right, I got Georgia.
Yeah, me too. Based on who they played and how they looked doing it, nothing. And remember, this is not disrespecting other teams, but come on, Alabama didn't play anybody.
Yeah, Utah
now, our
State.
Opinion might change tomorrow, or excuse me, on Monday when we come in here and see what Alabama does to Texas. They go to Austin and just blow their doors off. And, oh, okay. Yeah, it's going to go to that opinion of it's a two-horse race in this thing. But right now, Georgia has the most impressive win. I'll go with Georgia, number one.
Me too. And Bama, too. Ohio State stay three?
For me, it did. I know it was close, but it was close against, like I said yesterday, against a Notre Dame team that might be better than what we think.
Notre Dame may not lose another game.
Right.
Throughout the season. Do you give credence? I heard some of this conversation yesterday. Do you give any credence to that win is more impressive the way they had to get it than if they had just won, say, 55-31?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they could have been a little shocked that they were still in a dogfight late in the third going into the fourth quarter, you know. And Notre Dame could have been inspired. And yeah, so with the way they had to how they won it, that yeah, I'll give them
a Ryan Day was
that.
Beating that drum about having to win a tough game and be tough to be able to win that game. And he's right about that. And, you know, the question mark going into the season for them was defense. It was not offense. And the defense showed up.
Looked good.
Yeah, they did. So maybe there's.
The game. Listen, we love the big numbers, the scoreboard lighting up, and a ton of offense, but at the end of the day, that felt like, I know Notre Dame's on the conference, but it felt like a Big Ten game from the late 90s, you know?
Oh, I mean, and I could see that game happening in November.
Yeah.
And having to be tough in the cold to win a game like that.
Right.
They were able to week one. All right, who you got at four?
Well, I know I kind of questioned it, but after re-looking at it and because of how other teams played and who they played, I'm comfortable putting Michigan right there at four.
I put Florida.
Okay.
Just because.
I had a feeling you're going to go.
Because of that win.
Right.
You know, it is nice to hear. You don't hear a bunch of, well, Utah was overrated. You don't hear that talk, thank goodness, because Utah is a very good team. They proved that. I mean,
they had a shot to win the thing at the end.
That's right. But Florida, as far as what they've done on the field this year, I almost put them in front of Ohio State. And then I was like, no. Notre Dame is going to be a top 10 team all year long, beating them the way they did, and I can't do that. But I'm going to put Florida four just because outside of Ohio State, they have the best win on their resume.
I agree with that. But I just stuck with Michigan there because they coming in, and I guess, you know, we're kind of talking both sides of our face, or I am when I say, you know, do the preseason polls even matter? But there's a lot of weight there, and they are coming off a good season last year. And then I was thinking, well, I'm not comfortable with Clemson, with how they looked. I think the question is still out about OU and even Baylor and even OSU. So that's why I put Michigan there.
Okay.
You got it five.
Michigan.
That's where you put Michigan. Okay.
I put Michigan five because of the dominance that they displayed. I think the two quarterback, the way that Harbaugh is handling it, is fascinating.
It is a little bit fascinating.
I think it's fascinating because it's totally different than what a lot of people do. And when you hear – I was actually watching that game, and surprisingly with the sound on at that point, early in the game because of Mark Jones and RG3, not my cup of tea.
No.
Mark Jones especially, not my cup of tea. I don't mind RG3, but Mark Jones is just on a different level of ridiculous. But as they were talking about this in the first quarter, John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh's brother,
right,
texted RG3. They were discussing it to explain a little bit further what Jim Harbaugh meant, because if you remember in the press conference, he talked about it being biblical, and he talked about Sam. Oh my gosh, my head just went blank. Solomon, golly, I was going to say Samson. I was like, I know Nate Samson, Solomon, and his wisdom, and so what the idea is you've got two seeds, two quarterbacks, you water them the exact same way. See which one flourishes.
Okay.
That makes perfect sense. And if you do it the way he's doing it, McNamara isn't looking over his shoulder every pass at the sideline in game one to see if McCarthy's running on the field to take his spot. And then in game two, when McCarthy gets to start, he's not looking over his shoulder every other pass to see if McNamara's coming in. You give one this game, one that game, and go. And see what happens. I think if you're not gonna make a decision, to me, this is a way better way to do it than, okay, you get the first two series, you get the second two in the same game. Let them play the whole game. That way they're not constantly looking around like, did that play just get me yanked, and then this guy's going to take off.
Right. I think there's some other motives to this for Harbaugh with how he's doing this with this quarterback situation. He likes them both, and he doesn't want to name one starter so the other one can enter the transfer portal.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that leading into the season.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know what I think? I think he wants to play McCarthy because he thinks he's more talented, but he feels like he owes McNamara because he's the older guy and stuck around.
Yeah.
Like, there's some of that, too.
Yeah.
All right, who you got at five?
That's where I put Clemson. Really good defense. Offense has some question marks, and if they could get over the pride and actually start the quarterback that needs to be playing, they could be really good.
How crazy is it, from what we saw in 2020 at South Bend, Indiana,
yeah,
from a true freshman and DJ Uiagalelei to now? That dude is not very good.
Not really.
He's really not very – I mean, he's just simply not very good. Maybe the worst prediction –
he kept Georgia Tech in it.
Maybe the worst prediction ever made on this show happened going into the season a year ago. when I picked him to win the damn Heisman Trophy. I mean, what a horrific pick. Horrible. I mean, what do you week three, week four, he's done? Klubnik's in? There's no way it can last.
It's going to turn into a situation, and I'm going to effort their schedule.
I've got it right now. That's exactly what I just did.
Pulled
it up. Oh, wow. Furman, Louisiana Tech, next
win,
two.
Win.
And then at Wake Forest, which, by the way,
yeah.
Sam Hartman back.
Yeah.
They finally – oh, never mind. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
Then North Carolina State at home, back-to-back weeks, and then they get a – Florida State looks tougher all of a sudden at Notre Dame in early November, Miami at home in mid-November.
If North Carolina State gets it together and plays up to expectations, that could be the game you circle. That could be student section chanting game. All OU fans know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, we want Cade.
Some struggles there from DJ.
I just can't believe what he looks like. Man.
I know. If there's struggles there, you're going to start hearing the rumblings and mumblings in the Clemson crowd.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that.
Not necessarily. Now they could definitely go to Wake Forest and lose, and it could be a moot point. It's like, all right, we're going to make a different directions for the NC State game. But if they somehow get to there undefeated, and then there's but by the skin of their teeth, and then that's a game. Yeah, I think they're going to want to succeed, and a lot of people put them in that the four spot in the playoff.
I did.
They're not going to do it with DJ. That's just my
no.
Take.
They're not
going to do it with.
And
guy.
It's weird because I think for me,
I call him DJ because I can't say his name.
I know. I don't. I've heard it 100 different ways. But it's like part of the reason why I picked him, I'm like, he can't be that bad. I saw him as a true freshman against a Notre Dame team that was in the play. I mean, what happened?
He did it in the rain, mind you.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked
like
great.
He can't be that bad. Yeah, I guess he can.
I guess he can.
Number six, I have got Arkansas. That went over Cincinnati, I thought was very, very impressive by the Hogs. And once again, it's just what have you done? Arkansas beat a ranked team on their home field. Better than a lot of these teams behind, you know, that just haven't had a chance to prove it. So I got Arkansas at number six.
That's where I have OU. A lot of question marks, like I said, a lot of them, not all of them, but some of them were answered on Saturday against a solid effort against a UTEP team. So, but there's still some stuff that needs to be answered, you know. I want to see them against a really tough opponent, but I kind of found them in that area right there. Around the sixth spot. They still look like a team that could win this conference.
All right, let's speed through because our guest is here. Seven, I've got Clemson. Eight, Notre Dame. Nine, up at Oklahoma. 10, Baylor. There's two teams that have a chance to shoot way up. Obviously Texas, but I don't have any faith in that. But the two teams that have a chance to shoot way up, just like Florida did. Baylor, going on the road to play BYU.
Yeah.
And then also Big Blue. My Kentucky Wildcats, if they can beat Florida on the road after what we saw from Florida, they have a chance to shoot way up next week.
Seven, I have A&M. Eight, Arkansas. Nine, Notre Dame. Best one-loss team in the country. And 10, Baylor. But I'm with you. That they could go up, way up, or way down, depending on what happens
in these early season
at BYU.
Yeah, when you start playing teams, when you actually play teams, you should get rewarded.
OSU, you got to play better defense. I'll put you in my top 10.
They're right outside for me, too. But they have, you know, they're playing an actual Power 5 team this week. Look good doing it. Which, by the way, you see the total on that game?
No. What is it?
It ain't high enough, I can tell you that. OSU may get there by themselves. Joined now by the head coach of Big Elk football, 2-0 so far, it's Zach Maynard. Zach, how's it going this morning?
It's going good.
Give us your thoughts on what happened on Friday night. The Elks came out, did what they needed to do to get a win over Bridge Creek, and just your overall assessment of that one.
Yeah, I mean, we did some good things. Defense played well. But that was just the expectation. That's just kind of who we are right now. You know, there's still lots of things to clean up, even defensively at this point. And so we're working on that, and the Elk City Elks are still just continuing to work on the Elk City Elks.
How much do you think in your mind, because I don't even ever remember a season like this, where you have four of those games that matter but don't matter in the grand scheme of things. How much does that give you guys a chance with four non-district games to maybe work on some different things you wouldn't, knowing that you had a district game coming up in a couple of weeks?
Well, it's a blessing. It really is, because there's lots of things that, especially offensively, there's things that we are working on that you're never going to see until we feel like it's the exact right moment to show it, whether that be formationally or play-wise. There's lots of things that we just continue to work on and polish up, and then that way when it comes out, there it is. You know, last year when we played Cushing in the first round, I jumped into four or five different coverages against Cushing and just completely tried to confuse that kid. And those weren't things that we worked on just for that week. We'd been working on them all year long, knowing that at some point it would fit. And when it fit at the right time. So, it's a blessing, especially whenever you're going to come play quality opponents. And you can use what you obviously you play to your strengths, but then you can use those things as you feel you need them.
Staying on the defense, last week, I know that you mentioned quality opponent. Bridge Creek down this year, but we were overly impressed. You'd almost – I don't care who the opponent is. When you put up defensive numbers like that, hold them to negative yards, I think they got first downs by way of our mistakes. So how impressed were you with your defense? And basically, cause that's what everyone's asking me is, are they that good or can they get – I told them I think they can get better. How impressed were you with last Friday?
Oh, obviously, it would take two games. We haven't given up a defensive touchdown yet this year. You know, does that mean that we have arrived and we've made it defensively? Absolutely not. There's lots of things to work on from a scheme standpoint, from a technique standpoint. But as far as the most important thing, which is being physical and chasing the football like your hair's on fire, that's great. That's where we're at. And I think that that's, you know, you guys were talking about college football when I first came in. That's maybe the biggest difference between OU from this year to last year, is that they're playing with a mentality of their hair is on fire and I've got to get to the football wherever it goes. And so when you do that, my coach Weber always said, when I first became a coach, he said, if you'll get them to play hard, you'll win every game you're supposed to win. You'll win every game where the talent level is about the same, and you'll have a chance to win every game that that team's better than you talent-wise. So that's just who we are.
Offensively, the offensive line has to be the key, and it has been so far, mm-hmm. It feels like to me. There's some things to clean up on in kind of in the backfield and all that. So what, in your mind, has to change just a little bit for this thing to really get humming the way that it's obvious it can? It just hasn't been consistently humming just yet.
Yeah, and I think that, you go back to the Altus game, the second half, it finally got to where, okay, we're clicking and we're getting 5, 6, 7, 8 a pop, and there wasn't – and even maybe in the first half it was the same way. We just miss a blocking assignment here or miss this or that there. You know, really, you're talking about – just going back, we've played three games, including one JV game, and we have fumbled the ball 13 times in three games. That can't happen. You're not going to win consistent football if that's happening. And a lot of that, had an assistant tell me, well, Zach, the guys who are carrying the ball haven't carried the ball. We only have one guy who's carried it really any in the last 2 years. So he said, take it with a little grain of salt, because it's not like we're not working on it.
Right.
And so there's a knowledge, experience aspect that has to go into all this. And so, you know, that's another thing why it's a blessing to have four non-district games and then even a bye week to really hone in and critique our skills going into district play. But we're excited about where we are, and we can see the flower starting to almost try to blossom offensively. It's just a matter of it needs a couple more, it needs a little more experience before it decides to blossom.
All right, I'm going back to defense. The last two games, haven't seen a lot of downfield passing. Saw a couple last week that Big Elks took advantage of. Are you anxious to see a little bit more of that probably this week against Canadian?
I am, and it'll be good. It'll be good for us. It'll be good for our pass rush. It'll be good for, you know, our secondary guys, the same things that we've been working on since week one. You know, even though we had Altus and Bridge Creek, who were run dominant teams, it's not like we didn't go out there and still throw it around on the skill guys in the back end. We got five guys that can play either corner. you know, and very talented guys, but also still kind of like on the offensive side, those guys at those positions are inexperienced to an extent because they didn't play a whole lot last year. But I think that when they get tested, they'll be ready to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, to that point, you know, a guy like Caden, you know, Holder, out there as a freshman, a sophomore, but then last year missed the whole season essentially because of a knee injury. He's not experienced as you would think he would be with where he started as a young guy and now being his senior year out there.
Yeah, well, and then you even go into the, you know, he wasn't even there last year to be able to learn the scheme. Right. You know, the both safeties right now are very comfortable with the scheme and safety and making the checks and the calls. And I think the corners have done a really good job of picking up on those things as well. So, yeah, obviously I think athletically from a talent level, you know, we're excited about those guys. It'll be interesting to see when the ball starts flying how they respond. But I don't see any reason to think that they would respond anyway other than being ready to go.
How have you approached the short week? Did you guys practice Monday, regular schedule-wise? How'd you approach that?
We practiced Monday morning, and then we went over to the JV game. And so everything's been pretty much on schedule, treated it the exact same. And ultimately, we're excited. We're excited to have Canadian in town. Imagine the place will be packed and homecoming. And so we're excited to represent our town, our community, and give everything we got.
Tell us about the Wildcats. What are they going to challenge you with, both offensively and defensively?
Defensively, they're bigger than anybody we've played so far. They're more physical. They've got two good linebackers, two good interior defensive linemen. So it'll be a challenge for us. And if we play like I think we're capable of, we'll block them, and it won't be that big a deal. And then offensively, it's kind of a tale of two tapes. The first game, they're going as fast as they can, snapping it every 8 seconds, you know, warp speed. And then they'll get too tight and run it right at you. So there's lots of challenges for us this week defensively on just getting it lined up, getting the call in and running and playing good, solid, sound defense. And then offensively, take care of the football, block them, just same thing as every week.
I thought it was interesting in that Bushland game. I don't know if I've ever seen exactly what the formation and the way they did that. But on their first touchdown, it was like a 45-yard quarterback sneak. But as the wingback was like the seventh or eighth offensive lineman that just got in behind and just kind of pushed him right through the hole, and next thing you know, the quarterback spits out the other side and he's gone. I don't know if I've ever kind of seen the way that they drew that up.
No, it's interesting, and I don't. That kind of reminds you a little bit of Clinton with the Pow kid.
Yeah.
They're getting foot to foot, and he just snuck it in there and went for six. And that's the one formation that they kind of get under center with, and they did it once or twice against Seminole the week before. But it'll be exciting. If I'm watching our film, I don't know that trying to run the ball at us like that is maybe what he's thinking may be the best idea. But it is what it is. If whatever they show up in, we'll be prepared for.
Yeah, and that's the last question I've gotten. The question I've got from everybody about back to, is the defense really that good? And my answer is this. When you see somebody throw it around, if we can cover them and tackle them when they get then the answer is yes. Because to me, what I've seen so far, it's going to be pretty darn hard to just line up and run the football at the Elks defense.
Yeah, and I'd say this. Don't expect us to hold people to negative 35 yards of total offense, okay? Because that's not going to happen. But ultimately, regardless, you know, we go back to a year ago. Cushing breaks a bubble screen for a long one, and Mason Price horse collars him at the five. Well, that's just playing hard. And then what happens? Well, they go four and out, and we get the ball back. So it's just little things like that that I can promise you as a fan, as a person who cares about Elk City, our football teams will always play hard, regardless of whether the other team makes a good play or we make a bad one. But we are going to play hard, and that's the only way that we can overcome our mistakes.
Last question for me. You mentioned Mason. I thought it was cool last week. Just kind of a fun question. We saw those guys back on the sideline. Do you like that? Do you like seeing your old players come back?
Absolutely. And I told our coaches, and we have an open door policy. If those guys want to come back, and we're going to give them a big hug, love on them, and I think that that's that's just as important as anything else. You know, back to kind of last summer, we wanted to see them grow up. And, you know, when those guys get married, I'd love to have a wedding invitation, you know, because you feel like you're a part of that kid's life and you help that kid get somewhere or become something positive.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and joining us. Good luck to the Big Elks on Friday night.
Absolutely.
Head coach Zach Maynard of the Big Elks, 2-0 with Canadian Texas coming to town on homecoming night.
Get there early.
Yeah, get there early.
I mean, one for homecoming and two for a really, really good game.
Yeah, once again, 6:30 is the homecoming time. So if you get there and you're looking for it at halftime, you're going to be too late.
That's right.
All right, Jared. That's another show in the books.
All right. You know, we didn't do our NFL thing, but we got that tomorrow. You want to do that tomorrow?
Tomorrow, okay. NFL picks, previews. Text in yours as well. And we got to update that Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em leaderboard.
Nah, we're good.
I couldn't find you on the first page.
Nah, we're good.
I wonder what happened. Everybody have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow. Skinny on Sports right here on the Esports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening. Hey!